Hi, everybody. My name is Stephen Bradshaw, and this is the What Makes You Tick podcast. Welcome to episode one. Hi, everyone. Stephen Bradshaw here, and welcome to What Makes You Tick. On this podcast series, I'm going to have conversations with people from all walks of life and find out what motivates them, what inspires them, what gives them happiness, and what makes them tick. There's no area or topic that's out of bounds, believe me. So I hope to gather nuggets of inspiration for us all so that we can learn and grow to get the best out of our lives. We've only got one, so let's make the most of it and apply what we learn along the way. So without further ado, here we go, and please enjoy the show. I am really, really excited to introduce you to my first guest. This person has had a really, really successful career and has been in the telecom industry for 17 years. Worked with some of the most amazing global brands like UPC, Virgin Media, Liberty Global. And now we are here in Philadelphia because she has recently taken up a position with Comcast. So her trajectory is undeniable. Not only that, she was president of Women in Cable Telecom for 2 years, 2016 through to 2018. And this guest is someone I am very, very proud of. She is my sister, Rona, or as I call her, Rosie. And I'm delighted that we get to share this experience together. So, hi, Rona. Welcome to the podcast.
The feeling is not mutual.
Thank you.
About the experience.
Well, listen, thank you for taking the time. And yeah, I suppose while we were over here in Philadelphia, it was a good opportunity for me to sit you down and ask you to do this. I know you're very, very embarrassed about it, but yeah. Listen, we have to start somewhere. I told you about 4 weeks ago that I wanted to do it. So I gave you plenty of lead time and plenty of notice.
They said no.
You did. You said no. And a little bit of persuasion over the last couple of days managed to convince you to do it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
How is Philadelphia treating you?
Philadelphia is great. Yeah, it's a great old city. Good vibe.
When did you get here again?
We got off the boat, as they say, on the 6th or 7th of May.
Okay.
And now we're heading into our 7th month.
Lovely, lovely. And you're settling in okay?
Yeah, I love it over here now, actually.
Could you tell, I suppose, people... Let's start at the beginning, right? So the reason I'm doing this podcast, as you know, right, is to learn and to listen to people's stories who I believe are successful and in all different walks of life, right? So the podcast is called What Makes You Tick. And it's really to try and understand what makes people tick, what motivates people, what drives people to get to where they are. And just to kind of see if there's any nuggets or anything that we can learn from people who've gone, I suppose, ahead of us. So my desire out of this is to create a kind of like a library or an archive of podcasts that people can go back and listen to. And when they find themselves in similar instances or challenges or whatever, that they can actually take little pieces of information, nuggets of info, and use it in their own lives. Like, as I said in the intro there, right, you're really, really successful in my eyes, all right? You mightn't see it like that, but I think that you're really, really, I think you've done brilliantly over the last number of years, and you've now arrived in Philadelphia. You're working with Comcast, which is an enormous operation, and you're a senior vice president of digital. Could you basically just tell us a bit about your journey to this point? Because you've had 17 years in the industry. It would be interesting to let people know in a nutshell what that journey has been like.
In a nutshell. It's obvious I'm quite uncomfortable about the premise, because in my eyes, I've just worked really hard and I've got a couple of breaks and I've been very lucky to have had a number of really amazing sponsors that have helped guide me throughout what seems to be a lifetime now. 17 years sounds ridiculous. But essentially, I studied business studies in the University of Limerick, and always enjoyed the generalism of the topic of business, whether it was marketing or economics or, you know, even accounting to a certain extent, just understanding every facet of how a business works. And so for me, I always knew I wanted to be a generalist in marketing. And I came out of university and was lucky enough to get a role. In my first major role was probably in Smart Telecom, working with a team of people that had really built a business from the ground up. And it was a very young and exciting organization that had come out of the Celtic Tiger boom and was effectively competing against Aircom of the day, and went in as a marketing assistant. So started from the bottom and really just wanted to learn my craft, learn the business. So Smart Telecom was involved in a lot of sponsorships, and it was a lot of advertising going on, direct mail advertising, some the old school kind of traditional stuff. And so I really just cut my teeth in it. But I was really lucky that I had a number of great sponsors within Smart Telecom, and they really, I don't know, they either saw the ambition and the desire in me, and hopefully a little bit of talent, and they really helped me grow. And over the course of maybe 18 months from when I started, I became the marketing manager there and eventually became the head of marketing. And so really had a great opportunity to learn the basics, and was there for about 3.5-4 years. And then I left Smart Telecom and moved into a bigger brand, UPC Ireland. It was just bought by Liberty Global in the same year, in 2006, and they had just bought NTL Ireland and Chorus Multichannel in on the west side of Ireland, and went in as head of marketing into a really small team. There was myself and two other people, and this was working with a multinational corporation. Liberty Global at the time was the largest international cable business outside of the US and had close to 15 different operations around Europe. So it was going to be a great opportunity to learn and grow. And really got in at a great time there. It was a business that was investing in infrastructure and investing in growing a brand, and really, I suppose, rehabilitating a brand like NTL and Chorus, which were not necessarily much loved brands in Ireland at the time. And again, I had an opportunity to take what I had learned in Smart and actually apply it on a bigger scale in UPC at the time. And then I also had the additional piece where I was learning internationally as well. So I was constantly interacting with our Dutch headquarters and with the 14 other businesses around Europe that we were partnered with, and spent 7 years there. And actually probably was one of the happiest times of my career so far. Had the most wonderful time. Smart Telecom was great, but UPC was something special, and we had such a laugh. We had a great time, both professionally and personally. We made some great friends, learned an awful lot, and then...
So important to have that, though, isn't it? To have that balance of that professional work hard when you're there, but then also be able to enjoy each other's company outside.
Yeah, I think it allows you to be authentic. It allows you to be yourself, because you spend so long with people, and you do have to... You have to learn from the individuals around you, and it's really important because those individuals also make you who you are on a day-to-day basis within the environment. And so I think if it was not a good environment, then I think that would have made me somebody different. So I was able to kind of grow my personality and grow myself and learn. And the CEO of the Irish business of UPC, Dana Strong, moved to the UK to be chief operating officer, and she was building a team from scratch. And it was just as the digital revolution was kind of starting, and she asked me, would I come to the UK and set up the digital team and the digital business? And that for me was going back to my desire to be a generalist, really meant that I could start to really broaden what I understood of marketing. It allowed me to add to the gaps that had been created over time as industries change and businesses change, and allowed me to grow a team from the beginning. So, and I moved to Yeah, London on the 20 in December 2013.
Wow, big change. Yeah. Big pace of life would be different massively as well from Dublin to London, right?
It was definitely the of the moves I've made, London was the hardest because it was the first.
Okay.
And I commuted back and forth for 18 months from Dublin to London, so that was hard.
Actually, yeah, Jesus.
So you kind of never kind of put down sticks, you never put down roots.
Yeah. That's tough. Seriously.
That was where I probably learned one of my biggest lessons in, of me as an individual. I need a grounding factor. Like I need like the yin to my yang. So, and Ian, my husband, that he's that person to me. So he, whenever I get overstressed in work or something's going wrong or I need to talk about something or I need to give out about someone, or I just need to balance like the challenges that come with starting a new job and getting to know new people and politics, having him there at home is a really important part of it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of felt that I never really settled in London for the first 18 months probably.
Yeah.
And I was quite a highly strong individual. I smile because you think that I'm highly strung regularly, but I was definitely more highly strung than normal.
Well,
and
it was a
just
huge
quite
change
stressed.
Though, you know, like that, but to commute, even though people say, listen, London's only an hour or two away. It's not even that. It's being over there in a environment, which was, I suppose, a team that was being built from the start. So there was no real roadmap for you at the start. Right. So there was a lot of pressure on you. Right. And then to find that when you're coming home from work and stuff, to not have that person to just de-stress with or to just throw, just tell how your day is. Like over the phone is different. It doesn't work. Or somebody just sit down with and watch TV with or something. Not having that for 18 months is really, really tough. And I suppose it's probably one of the things that in this move here, it was a case of, right, if we're going and we're doing it right, we're going to...
Yeah, it was a big lesson for this move, for sure.
But so tell me, when you got to London then, so the first 18 months, really, really tough. So I suppose a bit of advice in terms of if somebody is looking to move or is looking to make a change is try and set up a foundation.
Yeah, I would definitely say know what you need for balance.
Yeah.
Know what you need for just support and security. And I think you've got to continue to be yourself. Like my biggest thing is always about being authentic. Like regardless of who's around you and who's doing what, you would just have to be yourself. And in a situation where you're going to somewhere that you don't know the people, you don't know the politics, you don't know how the business works, you don't know the city, when there's a whole lot of that kind of going on, you've got to be really comfortable with yourself. And then in my case, I just was not comfortable with myself either. So I was just completely out of balance.
Yeah.
And actually it was when I started to get a coach. So I got So I got a work life coach, I suppose, most wonderful lady, Tina Kakari. And I just met with her on a number of occasions. She had come in to do a team building exercise for the new team that I was in, and everybody did personality tests and, you know, how to understand each other so that you could work better together effectively, like Myers-Briggs and FIREB's and things like that. And Tina and I, she also was, the opportunity was given to us to work with her one-on-one. And I had the opportunity to work with Tina one-on-one, and she really gave me the ability to know what makes me tick. Pardon.
Yeah, nice.
The use of your podcast name.
Yeah.
She made me incredibly self-aware. I'm very self-aware anyway, but I think she made me even more self-aware of the inner workings of like how I feel when I'm becoming stressed and imbalanced, and reading situations and embracing what I bring to the table and all that kind of stuff. Because for quite some time, I was very caught up by the fact that I was maybe 10, 15, 20 years younger than my peers.
Yeah.
And I kind of carried that as a bit of a chip. And actually, she helped me see it as being quite a positive at the end of the day. And she just helped me have the opportunity to share what I was thinking and then be able to move on from it.
Brilliant.
So, I mean, I would definitely, you know, I definitely believe hugely in you've got to have a sponsor that will pave the way for you and kind of pick you up when things go wrong or pull you out of something when there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
And I've had a number of them. But I also think you have to have a coach that helps you understand you and know what your superpowers are and understand what's good about you.
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of people in terms of, so I did course in sports psychology, right? And one of the big things when it comes to athletes is the self-talk. And a lot of people are very negative towards themselves when it comes to talking to themselves. They don't like bigging themselves up because I suppose as well, it's not something that we normally do, you know, as Irish or whatever. We don't normally do that. We don't go around saying how amazing we are because modesty is one of kind of like cultural traits that we grew up with. But it's actually really interesting that she probably, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but maybe did she kind of help you realize, as you say, yeah, I might be 15 years younger, but that's going to bring so much more to the table. Or it shows that I'm 15 years younger, but that's a real positive thing because I'm coming with a completely different perspective.
You know? She definitely helped me with self-sabotage. And that kind of that thing that you just said, like around not finding the problems, but celebrating the positives. So I'm like, I still have voices in my head, obviously, but
another light.
I do have imposter syndrome, like every woman on the planet, and I think a lot of men, but I definitely am better at dealing with it since I worked with Tina. And I worked with Tina for, I was 5 years in, 4.5 years in Virgin, and I worked with her for a good, like, 3 of those 4 years.
Brilliant.
So she really helped me, and she's a very, very good friend now, and she's a great advocate of me, so it's
brilliant. Jesus, yeah. I actually didn't really even know that that you were chatting to her, but it's brilliant to know because, like, you think a lot of people will only see the surface, see things on the surface, or like in media, get the headline and go, okay, well then that's, I have that person boxed off. I know if they're okay or not, right? Whereas a lot of it's what happens under the bonnet, right? It's like what you do for yourself behind the scenes. So, like going to the, when you're training and stuff, people will look at their physique and train and try stay healthy in that regard. But if you don't train your brain and learn how to create mechanisms to cope or show gratitude or improve your self-talk or something, then it doesn't matter what you do. Your brain is going to lead you down a path that you may not be able to control, you know?
Yeah, I think you just have to... I think one of the other things that I learned through Tina and kind of over the years, I think you have to understand people. You have to be able to empathize and you have to be able to try and figure out what's going on behind the scenes in terms of the questions they're asking, why they're asking those questions, why they're behaving in that way. And so I do think I do a lot of psychoanalysis with my teams to understand the types of individuals and the types of thinkers that are around my table. So that when you understand that you should have diversity around your table anyway, and you want to create opportunities for, you know, a real rainbow kind of conversation to happen. But I do think understanding if a certain individual is more analytical or more of a reflector, or somebody's a super extrovert or someone's a super introvert, knowing those things helps you also get more out of the individuals. And I think for me, knowing those things about myself helped me get more out of me as well. So I think it's just all about education and learning.
Yeah. So you went from, so 4 years in Virgin Media in the UK, right? And then a little hop, skip and a jump to Liberty Global, who own basically Virgin.
Yeah, I had done 3.5, 4 years in Virgin Media. We'd built a team. We'd had some great success with the digital function. And we were essentially trying to replicate that across the businesses, the other markets. And so I left Virgin Media to work in the corporate headquarters and be responsible for digital transformation across Europe. And I did that for a year. And Liberty Global had been consolidating a lot of businesses over the years and continued to consolidate and sell businesses. And so I think one of the things that I had learned a lot about myself in the previous few years was that I get energy from people, and I get energy from running a team and from having a team. I get energy from positivity, and I get energy from action and seeing results. And that year where I was in head office, I had a very small team and I wasn't necessarily directly responsible for anything, because even though you were setting the strategy, you were handing it off to the operations to actually execute.
Yeah.
And that for me was a big lesson, that I just didn't get a buzz out of it. I just didn't enjoy it. Delighted to have done it, because I had always said in my 14 years in Liberty Global, I always wanted to go across operations, across markets. So I had done Ireland and England, and I wanted to go to the head office, to HQ, which I got the opportunity to do as well. But I knew at that point that it was time to move, and the consolidations were happening, and so it was just the right time to leave.
Yeah.
And to take the opportunity that was at hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then from there, then, so you got this chance.
I took 12 months out, and I think if
you traveled,
I did travel, but I do think if there was any big lesson learned out of the 12 months, is that like you should not be afraid to take those breaks, and if the opportunities arise, to have those. Like I was on gardening leave for 6 of those 12 months, then just take it and go with it and enjoy it and live in the moment. And it's a great recharge. It's a great way of rehabilitating your mind and yourself, and just refreshing who you are outside of corporate life.
Yeah. And so from there, then got the chance.
Speaking of sponsors, Dana.
Actually, one of the things I was going to ask you later, but we can come up to it now, is like, there's you speak of sponsors and influencers, or people who've influenced your career or your life at different stages, whether it's on a professional side or a personal side or a marry of both. Yeah. Who would those people be? Or like, talk to us about those people, because obviously
I've been very lucky to have had so many, to be honest with you. And like, all the way back to my school days, I went to Salesian Convent in Fermbank in Limerick, and they were,
so unfortunately not there anymore.
It's not there anymore. Yeah. No, but the Salesian sisters are still there.
Yeah.
They were some of the most magnificent teachers and sponsors. They really built you up, and they really
helped you build
your personality and to do what really you enjoyed. And I had a wonderful time with them. And then I met this wonderful guy who was my choir master, John Doyle. And I was in choir with him from 13, and he's still a great, great friend. And
legend.
Yeah. He helped me be confident with my talents, and just kind of step out of my shell, because I'm definitely a closet introvert.
Yeah.
100% a closet introvert. And
step out of your shell. And I suppose you mean there in terms of singing as well as everything else, because people might know this, but you are a phenomenal singer too, right? Sang with Bunratty Castle. What was the name of that setup? Was it just Bunratty Castle?
Bunratty Singers,
yeah. I remember you have to go through a huge kind of trial and interview process and all that stuff. But
So John, and then definitely Ken Barry, Paul Sullivan from Smart Telecom, and then really Dana Strong when I got to Liberty. And a gentleman called Charlie Bracken, CFO of the business. And I've just been really super lucky to have just great sponsors. Lots of great sponsors that gave me great tools and listened and advice. So they kind of were a hybrid between a sponsor and a mentor, but they, I think it's an important kind of thing to have.
And do you think they had any kind of similar traits, or was they all just had their own different kind of way of helping you or supporting you or showing you?
I've never really thought about what connected them. I don't know if anything did connect them, but I think we just connected and clicked, and it's just been good.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So now then, you've got the opportunity then to come to Comcast. So tell us about that.
A lovely man called John Williamson, who worked for Comcast, asked me would I be interested in working with them. And Dana had introduced us. And yeah, I ended up moving here in May. And now I'm here running the digital division for Comcast, where we're responsible for the design and creation of customer experiences that are processes and digital encounters through websites and apps, and ultimately really helping to drive the transformation of the culture to be much more about listening and answering customer needs and advocating and executing on things that really are imperative to what customers need from a brand. And our job is to create those experiences and to design those journeys and make it as simple and frictionless and awesome as possible for a customer to interact with us.
So what do you think are the biggest, like, obviously completely different culture, different market, different size, all that stuff. What are the kind of key main challenges that you have or that you see as opportunities in the existing role? Or are you still kind of finding your feet?
I don't think they're challenges. I think that kind of need to stay true to who you are, so that maintaining that authenticity in an environment where people don't know you, and I think you could be easily swayed to become quite like what they are themselves, or to kind of fall into a natural cultural setup. I think is really important to not to kind of buck it, but to try and kind of stay true to who you are and figure out how you can connect and complement what the business culture is. I think that's been a really key thing. And then I think it's all around active listening and understanding and trying to figure out the politics of the business and how the business runs itself and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting to say that, because there's a number of kind of things that people don't generally like, and one of those things can be change. A lot of people don't necessarily like change. They like to kind of keep with the doing what they've always done, because that's the way it's always been done. But when you see change coming, it actually is, while it might be uncomfortable, it sometimes is the best thing that could ever happen, right?
Yeah. Hindsight is always something that helps you see the change was good. And sometimes you know the change is good, but you are trying to rage against it because you don't want to change. And sometimes you don't see it coming and it punches you in the face.
Yeah.
And either way, you've just got to ride the wave.
Yeah.
And I think if you can, stick your feet in the ground and bend your knees and just brace for impact, I think that allows you to take control of the situation.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big believer in knowing what your path is and where you want to get to, and making decisions and choices based upon what that North Star or that goal is. Because I think then you won't ever make a decision that is incorrect or wrong. It might feel uncomfortable, or it might feel that it's somewhat outside of the norm.
Yeah.
But I think if you're true to who you are, true to what your goal is, I think in hindsight you look back and you go, oh, I completely am delighted that I took that path and I did that thing and I changed that way.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And in both professional and personal, it's so true to stick to your guns and believe in yourself and go follow whatever objective it is that you're aiming for.
But like, if you look at that, so what, where you look at your path and your goals and your objectives and all that stuff, right? So you're here now, you're in America, you're in Philadelphia, we're in your home, which is absolutely stunning. And like, what do you see as the path now for over the next while? Where do you see yourself going, and what type of objectives are you hoping to hit over the next while?
You know, I think since I was really young, I've always been striving for the next thing. Like, once I get into the thing I'm in, I'm always trying to plan for how I get to the next level. And I'm actually trying to not do that with this one. I'm trying to, like, I still have a goal. I still want to continue to succeed. And I think I still want to be more successful than I am in my career. But I kind of also want to enjoy the moment. Brilliant. And I'm not too sure that I've always enjoyed the moment. Although in hindsight, I've always had a great, great time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've made some wonderful friends. But I think I just want to kind of enjoy it. But I know that I'll enjoy it for a moment and then I'll want to kind of move forward. Yeah. But I'm kind of okay with that right now. Like, in the past 17 years, as you pointed out, the last time I was outside of the business, outside of like one organization, was either at the very beginning with Smart Telecom or right now with Comcast. And so the 14 years in between have all been in the same company, and I've therefore known everybody in that company regardless of the roles that I've had in the company.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I just have to settle in a little bit and listen and watch and just find my way. And then I think then after probably a year, I can kind of, I'll start to think about then kind of the next step within this space.
Yeah, there's a book I read, Solve for Happy, by a guy called Mo Goddard. And I think I've mentioned it a couple of times before. But his,
probably ignored you.
Probably did. But his big thing is about enjoying now, enjoying the now. And because you get so many people who've got these objectives like, oh, I need to be at this level, or entrepreneur, or whoever it is, they're always trying to get to the next stage, the next step. And before they know it, they've gotten to it, but then they haven't actually spent time in the moments in the build up to that. You know, I think it's really, really interesting you're saying that, because, yeah, I've always known you as somebody who's like, okay, what's next? What's next? What's next? And it's good to hear that you're focusing on the now and on the moments that are...
I won't be focusing on it very long. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not in here now for the next decade.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But I definitely just want to enjoy it. Like, next year is a big birthday year.
It is.
And...
Watch out.
Watch out. And I just want to celebrate... what I've done over the course of the last few years. Like, I recognize that I've had a great career trajectory, and I recognize that I've done a lot more maybe than others have, and I recognize that I have a very great personal life off the back of it, and I'm very lucky to have a really great partner. So I kind of just want to run into that birthday, my 40th.
Oh, she said it.
Oh,
she
my God. That means Stephen's not far behind. I kind of just want to run into it and celebrate it, and just kind of recognize that like the last 20 years have been super successful from that perspective, and then we'll kind of wrap it back up again.
That actually leads me nicely into one of the other questions I have
for
you.
Is
no.
Oh.
But when it comes to success, all right, so what do you determine or deem to be success? Because a lot of it is down to the individual, right? So when I asked you to do this, you're going, oh, like, oh my God, why are you asking me? Why are we doing this, right? But because I think you're really successful in a number of avenues in life. For other people, maybe it's not about a job. Maybe it's about happiness. Happiness is success to other people. You know, it all depends on what you look at. But for you, what do you see as success? And yeah, what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's maybe looking to try and be successful or find success?
It's a hard question because it's so subjective.
We ask the hard questions in this podcast.
So I think success is if you can look yourself in the mirror and be happy and proud of what you've accomplished. And
nice.
If you stayed true to yourself and stayed authentic, and if the person you look at as you turn 40 is the same person that your friends knew and have known for the last 40 years. So I kind of think, for me, that's what it is. And I look around and I think success just comes in so many different facets. Like, yes, you know, job titles may sound great and sometimes they are, but I think you just have to be proud of what you've accomplished. And I think if you can make people happy, and I think if you can help encourage individuals, and I think if you can help them learn and just pay something forward, then I think that's success to me. Like, I would like to continue with my career to be successful in it, but I think probably if you had asked me that question 20 years ago or even 10 years ago, I would probably answer it in somewhat of a different kind of way. And it was, my career has always been an incredibly important part of who I am. It's really it's definitely something, it's part of my definition for sure. But it's not the only thing, but I think I've only realized that over the course of the last few years. So I think I'm just happy to be who I am. I still struggle on a daily basis to remain true to myself. And I still have these voices in my head that I continue to like try and shut up to make me want to go faster. And to maybe question myself. But I think I'm really trying hard to make sure that I just live in the moment and just enjoy life and have a good time.
It's brilliant because, like, yeah, there's, you kind of, I suppose your success or your career has also created huge opportunities for you, as in paving the way for women in business as well, right? So you look at what you did with women in cable and telecoms as president of that, or of that affiliation. Like, talk to us about that, and I suppose why you, how you got involved in it, but also then, like, what's the modus operandi for that? You know, obviously it's to promote women in business, but it's more than that, right?
I think it means different things to different people. Women in Cable Telecommunications, or WICT as it's known, is one of the longest established women community organizations in the United States. It's been running for the past 40 years. And it was established off the back of the cable business when you had a lot of cable businesses being created and not a lot of opportunity for women. And a number of women from within the cable business wanted to start to promote and create opportunities for women, and so WICT was born. And when I moved to London with Liberty to work for Virgin Media, WICT was trying to establish a new chapter outside of the United States, was going to be the first chapter outside of the United States. And literally, I happened to be working late, and Dana had been invited to a dinner, and a lady called Helen Scott, who was our chief people officer, had been invited to a dinner, and I was still in the office. And Dana couldn't make it and said to Helen, "I'm sure Rona has nothing else to be doing, so why don't you just bring her along?" And then at that dinner, we established the first chapter. And I began as the treasurer of the organization. Myself and Helen was the president. And then over the course of the few years, after 2 years, Helen left Liberty and then handed the presidency over to me. And really, our aim was to give women a voice, give women an opportunity to share their stories, to be built up by each other, to learn from each other. We really felt that, and it is the case, and it's why I joined it, there is not or there was not at that time, a huge number of women leaders in our organization, nor were they, there was a lot of women leaders on TV or in businesses that we were aware of. And it just felt like we needed to create the ability to be role models and create opportunities for women and young women in particularly to see that success was possible, even if they were surrounded by men. And I think we really wanted just to create an opportunity for them to come together and have a community that understood and empathized with them, and a community that they could learn from. And so we are, our kind of mission in WICT UK at the time was very much to create sessions where we would talk about lessons that women had learned. So we'd have a number, we had a number of really successful women from inside and outside of the telecoms business talking about their journey and how they have mapped their way through life, and what lessons they would have learned. And we had a number of presentations and sessions on key kind of values and kind of key mechanisms to help them, like resiliency and understanding themselves. And really, we just wanted to pay it forward. Like, we had, we recognized that we'd been very lucky that we had actually been, myself and Helen are both our business managers had been women in front of us, and so we had that perspective, but not everybody has it. So we just really wanted to do that. And I think in general, over the years, women haven't necessarily been each other's advocates. And I think we, some women, and definitely it happens in some businesses and in some kind of industries, women feel that they are competing against each other, when actually we're not competing against anybody, but we create the environment. And so I just wanted to not be one of those people, and I wanted to pave a path for those behind me that I maybe hadn't had in my early life, really.
Brilliant. And I think that's savage, because I think you're setting a tone, right, about basically being a team. You know, we're in this, if you've got an objective, you want to try do something, let's work together to try and get there, or also believe in yourself to achieve whatever goals you're trying to achieve. But what part do you think guys have to play in that? Because I think it's important that there's a supporting factor in that, and as well from a guy's perspective, in that it's important that guys are there, obviously, in promoting and supporting and encouraging and doing exactly what you said as well to women as well, because it's I wouldn't like it to ever become them versus us, but it's important that we all kind of work together as a team, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's not about them versus us,
yeah.
But the reality is that women are still only paid 15 cents less than men in the United States, 20p less in the United Kingdom. So the reality is that women are still at a disadvantage. It's getting better. And for sure, in this generation, it's not as prevalent, because people don't see themselves as unequals. And so you see more and more diverse teams being created and opportunities being created. But the reality is it still exists. And so until there is genuine equality, then there will always be the need for organizations to advocate for the minority,
yeah,
or the less privileged, yeah, whether that is sex, race, gender, whatever it might be,
yeah,
that's just the reality of the situation. So, and I think, you know, I think you're right that everybody has a role to play, but I think it's a very normal response around the us versus them situation. But the reality is that it's great if you don't see there being difference, but there is a difference.
Yeah.
So I think the way that we certainly think about it in WICT is that everybody plays a role. You've got to make sure that you are creating the least biased situations as possible, making sure that when you look around your table, if you're in work, or you look around your friendship table, that you have many different people of all different kind of types.
Yeah.
So that you have that diversity of conversation and thinking and relationships. And I think we just have to remember that we're all human beings and that we have to give everybody the same chance.
Yeah.
And even if they don't look like us and even if they don't think like us, doesn't necessarily mean that they can't complement and come together and really create something special.
Yeah.
So I just think it's about treating people with respect, and I think it's about making sure that we never become complacent about the fact that there is a gap and there is an inequality for not just obviously women, but for many, many types of people and for many types of
it's about giving groups. Everybody a kind of like a fair chance and a fair opportunity, I suppose. And then to also to add to that, I suppose it's important that you're right that you do have a diverse, like I know from working in marketing and advertising and all that, that there's many a time I go into a room and I'm the only lad. That's kind of like the industry, right?
Yeah.
But then when you go into a room and there's so many different people from all different walks of life, I think that's when the best work gets done.
And
I think
it's a good point. I think you shouldn't judge your surroundings and your environment as being the lead indicator of what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think it's true that there are some industries that are more biased towards males and females.
Yeah.
But I think the reality is that we still have some work to do. So my hope is that if any up-and-coming woman or man wants to have a conversation with me about what I've done and why I've done it, I'm hoping that my story helps them in some shape or form.
Brilliant. Yeah, and that nicely leads on to a question I had for you, is that, so we spoke earlier about, you look at things a little bit differently now than what you may have done maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And what kind of advice would you give that person? You know, so what kind of advice would you give yourself from 10 or 15 years ago, or somebody starting off, that like you've maybe garnered some insight over the last 17, 20 years or whatever, that you would kind of like to share with somebody starting off to kind of give them a bit of direction or something that you probably didn't have, you know?
Oh my God. I would probably say be yourself and trust the process to a certain extent. Like lean in, participate, be present. You can't complain about not being a part of something if you really truly didn't get in and get there.
Yeah.
And I'd probably say, you know, I was and probably still a little bit a pretty big overthinker, and so try not to overthink the situations. Like, trust
your gut.
You
get that from our mum. Or both, probably mum and dad.
Yeah. Like, trust your gut. It's never wrong, even though it might seem like it's the easy option or that really you've just had something bad to eat. But, like, it's usually the right thing. So, you know, lean in and just enjoy it and just go with the flow. I'm not a big fan of regrets or doing things differently, because I kind of believe that you get to where you are because of fate and all that kind of stuff, whether it's true or not, or you create your own opportunities. And I think you just have to go with the flow and
I suppose it goes back to what you said as well earlier on, is like, for you to, in terms of success, is be able to look in the mirror and be happy and be proud of what you've done. And that's the thing, by doing or following your gut or going with your natural instinct, you're probably on the right path, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. How have you found this experience, Ro?
Oh, it was torturous.
But if people were looking to get in contact with you to maybe get further advice, where would they go to, or what should they do? Find you on
Open a bottle of wine. I'm on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I think I'm Rona Bradshaw on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Find you on LinkedIn.
Yeah, or I'm Rosie at Rosie62 on Twitter.
at Rosie62 on Twitter. Yeah. Well, I'll put it into the show notes and you can find all that. But Rosie, I do appreciate you coming on board. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stevie. I appreciate you too, even though it was torturous. But I'm very thankful for you and I wish you all the success in the world and I hope you get beyond one episode.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks, Ro.
Thanks.
Well, there you go. My first interview is done. You know what? I'm really, really grateful that my sister could be part of this adventure with me. She really has been a great counsel to me over the last number of years, especially recently. She's been always a solid sounding board. And you know what? I'm really proud of her. I'm really proud of Rosie and what she's done. And listen, as she said, if any of you would like to get in touch with her, I'll leave you the links to her social handles in the show notes. And if you'd like to get in touch, there are a number of ways you can do so. Visit the website of whatmakesyoutick.net. You can email me on stephen@whatmakesyoutick.net, or you can head to Instagram, and the handle for Instagram is @whatmakesyoutickpod. And then finally, I'm also on Twitter under @steviebrads. Thank you very, very much. Until next time, everybody, take care and look after yourselves.